I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know. Clemson topped Alabama on Monday night to become college football's champion, and during Clemson's run to the title, Tigers coach Dabo Swinney has reportedly earned $1.4 million in bonuses, and that's on top of the $4.55 million in his base pay. There will be no cash bonuses, of course, for Hunter Renfro, who caught the game-winning pass, or for any of his teammates. That would be a violation of the NCAA rules, and the attempt to protect those rules is where we're going to start this week. My guests are Rachel Bachman of the Wall Street Journal and Eric Malinowski of Bleacher Report via Skype. Hello to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Hello, Bill.
I'm going to go first this week because I'm so exercised about this entire matter. Tom McMillan, who represented Maryland in the U.S. House of Representatives after his career in the NBA, he's a lobbyist now, and he heads an organization recently renamed Lead One, comprised of lots of college athletic directors. The organization used to be called the D1A Athletic Directors Association, which left no room for confusion, unlike Lead One. And they used to work out of Dallas, but Mr. McMillan announced this week that Lead One has booked the ballroom of the new Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. for its gala. And the agenda will include lobbying Congress members and the owner of the hotel, the guy with his name in front in gold, to oppose paying college athletes. Tom McMillan has said that paying college athletes would be devastating to the enterprise of college sports, which currently pays coaches a lot of money. And it's an easy thing to do in an industry where the workers don't get paid. So it feels to me as if the swamp is getting deeper and damper. And I'm going to leave it to either or both of you to tell me that I'm wrong and there's another interpretation to Lead One's plan.
No, I completely agree with you. This feels really icky on quite a few levels.
Swampy.
The humidity has gone way up. This is not sort of the progressive path that we've sort of been moving on for the last few years. I mean, I think this whole idea of the student athlete has become, you know, pretty sort of antiquated, like a pretty arcane concept. This is sort of not where the NCAA is heading. So I don't really know sort of what they hope to really gain from this, other than I'm sure a lot of people are going to get paid a lot of money along the way, and not to be too cynical, but that's probably going to be sort of the end result of all of this.
I admire your attempt to not feel too cynical, although I worry that the time for cynicism is upon us. But anyway, Rachel, you want to pick this up?
Well, I'm pretty cynical about this. The funny thing about this is the sort of befuddlement that overtakes some leaders of college sports, and they say, you know, look, why can't we just operate like we used to? Why are people objecting to the way we run things now? Well, first, there have always been objections to the fact that college athletes really can't get any compensation above their scholarships. But also, the biggest athletic programs now are making well over $150 million a year. Those are just the athletic departments. Things have changed dramatically for, as you mentioned, the coaches and athletic directors and administrators. They have not for the players. And so I think as the gulf grows between how much the colleges are making off these players and the cap on what the players can essentially make from this enterprise, it just gets more and more distasteful.
You know, maybe it's inevitable that as the movement to reform the revenue sports grows, the resistance to that movement would also grow, perhaps in desperation. That is what I see in Tom McMillan's announcement. And now I'm going to stop because I can't stand it anymore. Rachel, your topic is related to what we've been talking about, so take us somewhere else, please.
Indeed it is. A new pro football league is launching next year, but it's not trying to compete with the NFL. Instead, the Pacific Pro Football League aims to give talented players an alternative to college football. The league, which is led by the agent of quarterback Tom Brady, will have four teams in Southern California, all owned by the league itself. It'll play eight games, and that's a, you know, pretty modest start, but its ambitions could have a huge ripple effect on NCAA football as it's run currently, which of course prohibits players from being paid beyond NCAA-approved tuition and stipends. The average player compensation in this new league will be about $50,000, including benefits. Probably no millionaires being minted there in the short term. But that would make it possible for talented players to leave college early or skip it altogether and spend 3 years improving in the new league and then enter the NFL draft, which is an opportunity that basically has not existed until now. So I'm curious what you gentlemen think of this.
I think it's a fantastic idea. This is I think back to the USFL days, and you know that was again, if not for President-elect Trump, you know, the USFL was a thriving enterprise, and you know the competition is good. I want to believe that this is going to happen. And if you're looking for a model for this, you really look at the NBA and what they've done with their developmental league and the ability to sort of tie these affiliates to their pro teams. And if that's what they're striving for, then I think they're going to start off on the right path.
Maybe the theory here is no matter how much football there already is, the appetite in this country is so enormous for football that more is better. And I suppose we won't know whether that's true or not until this league actually gets underway. Rachel, is that, do you think, really likely to happen?
Yeah, I think given who's backing it, it will get underway. The big question with all prospective leagues is what kind of TV deal can you get or what kind of broadcast deal can you get generally? And that I don't know yet. Depends on their connections and the appetite that broadcasters see for this.
Eric, my sources, and I'm not free to name them, tell me that you'd like to talk about an FBI investigation. But go ahead, Bolo, recognize there are risks in doing this.
There's only so much that I can reveal, but I can tell you this. We're going to go back to May of 1965 to Lewiston, Maine. This was, of course, the site of the second Muhammad Ali Sonny Liston bout. The one thing that everyone kind of remembers is the iconic photo that Neil Leifer of Sports Illustrated shot, the one of Ali standing over Liston's body, taunting him to get up, one of the great sports photos of all time. It was also one of the most controversial finishes to any fight in modern boxing history, with the supposed phantom punch in the first round knockout that Ali had of Liston, and you know Liston's reported mob ties over the years. And it was sort of related to that. So something that I did not know, which I learned recently in an article in Deadspin, was that the FBI actually spent the better part of about 13 months investigating this fight, using good taxpayer dollars to figure out whether or not this fight was in fact fixed. I found this really fascinating, but it kind of got me thinking, like, you know, this is such a frivolous sort of investigation. I should say, the spoiler alert, it didn't really uncover anything of any import. But the idea of like a frivolous sports-related conspiracy that the FBI could look into these days, it got me thinking, like, you know, maybe Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, you know, in the playoffs last May were, you know, whispering salary cap minutiae to each other during timeouts or something like that. Or maybe, you know, Gino Auriemma's paying off coaches before games and that's why they can win 90 straight games. Or, well, I did say frivolous, so maybe we could lump Deflategate into all of that. I don't know.
First of all, I think we've learned, especially with recent history, that the less we know about what the FBI is doing, the more we like and respect it. So the more we learn about certainly the old investigations as well, it's just head scratching. But yeah, I'd like to see the FBI look into why the college football playoff national title game went, I think, about almost 4.5 hours, ended after 12:30. And I'd like to see if they could investigate why it takes so long to play the last minute of an NBA game. And these are enduring mysteries. So maybe we can give the FBI a shot.
I'm with you on that. In fact, I'm in favor of the FBI spending all their time investigating athletes and teams and matters such as you have brought up, because that way they'll have no time left to tap the phones of people inclined to disagree with assorted policies historically favored by FBI directors. The agents will be too busy trailing basketball players and bookmakers to worry about activists and whistleblowers and writers for that
matter. It's the perfect plan. What could go wrong?
I can't think anything good. My guests for this week's Three Stories You Should Know have been Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal and Eric Malinowski of Bleacher Report. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.